I need to update my bio because the African Wisdom book has been published. My latest book, my 11th book, will be published in May, which is called A First Aid Kit for the Mind, Breaking the Cycle of Habitual Behaviors. But here we are. Let's forget about bios. I always think, oh, bios. Yeah. So I'm gonna actually gonna think I'm gonna burn some Palo Santo and just smudge the portal. And just as I'm smudging the portal, just really an invitation to give gratitude to the minerals that are in our screens. You know, they're when we are on our telephones, on our computer, on our iPad, just know that there have been many minerals. Some of them perhaps have been stolen, and some of them perhaps have actually ethically been bought, but there are minerals in our computer screens so that we can be here. So as we recognize that perhaps we are on the unceded territory of indigenous lands, I'm on the unceded territory of the Tchekwelt land in Kanata, Canada, Vancouver, just know that we are also on the unceded territory of our computers. Yeah. It's really important to remember that. So just smudging and just giving thanks. Yeah. Okay, and just allowing yourself to settle. And thank you for being here. It's always a great honor to be in community with my BLAIPOC. I say BLAIPOC, which is Black Latinx, Asian Indigenous People of Color. And it's always a great honor to be in community with you all. So I get to start my Sunday with you all. Homiatakwase for all my relations. Ashe, asheo, ashe. Giving thanks to the East. Giving thanks to the West, to the North, to the South, to above and below. And giving thanks to our ancestors. We often hear that we are our ancestors' wildest dream. And sometimes when I think about that, I think, yeah, it's amazing the life I get to live right now. My ancestors perhaps would have dreamt that I could be living this life and would have dreamt that all of you could have been living this life. Yeah, so let's give thanks to our ancestors as I do the rattle. Let me just turn on the air. Oh, I'm just turning on the rattle. I'm just calling in our ancestors. Our ancestors have our backs. There are ancestors you may need to quarantine, so just quarantine them. We're not dealing with them today. We're just dealing with our helping spirits, our helping ancestors, as we settle. Okay, so we're going to move into a meditation. So just get yourself comfortable. Important for us to be comfortable when we sit. Just giving thanks to this mineral, the Palo Santo. Just knowing again when we smudge, kind of, it's not like this stick is separate from us or the herbs are separate from us. We are remembering that we are earth. Earth is within all our body. We eat from the earth. We metabolize the earth. And we poop it out of our systems. So the seats that we're sitting on often come from Earth. The floors in our house that we walk on come from Earth. We're just not separate. We're not separate from water. We're not separate from heat. We're not separate from the wind element. We wouldn't be able to survive if one of these elements was reduced. We would not be able to survive. So just really giving thanks to the elements. Earth, wind, fire, and air. And appreciating these elements within our soma, within our beautiful bodies. So as we enter into this meditation, take up space. Take up space. Have the sense of your head poised towards the skies. Even if you're lying down, you can still have your head, poised in the direction of the skies. And our feet poised in the direction of Mother Earth. Mother Earth, our most important ancestor, our oldest ancestor, Mother Earth. And just having the sense of Mother Earth grounding you, holding you, supporting you. Mother Earth is always there to hold us, to support us. When the prince woke up to the truth, just before the prince became a Buddha, the prince, when was assailed by doubt, when the prince was assailed by doubt, Amara said, "Who gives you the right to the seat of enlightenment?" The prince reached down to the earth, touched the earth, and asked the earth goddess to be its witness. The prince touched the earth to ground themselves and recognizing that they were not separate from the earth, and we are not separate from the earth. So take up space, sit with dignity, feel the width of your body. No matter how much width your body takes up, feel the width of your body and have the sense of dignity in your body. You were born, birthed into this world. Take up your space. It's your birthright. Take it up right now, wherever you are, and breathe. The practice of the mind full of breathing. Let your breath be medicine today. Breath is medicine. So let it be. Let it be your medicine for today. So as we enter into our practice, have the sense of breathing in and out, counting one, in and out, counting two, in and out, counting three, and all the way to 10 and back again. And the mind is going to wander. It's what the mind loves to do. So what? It's wandered. Bring it back. Bring it back to the in-breath, the out-breath, and counting one. You may get stuck on a number, you may find yourself going to 20 or 30. So what? Just start again. The mind full of breathing, in, out, one, and all the way to 10 again. So, as we delve deeper into the practice in the second stage, we're going to count before the breath. This time, we count one and breathe in and out, and count two and breathe in and out, and all the way to 10 again. And just really see if you can drop deep into the body, allowing your seat to support you as you allow your breath to be medicine. Count one in and out, and all the way to 10 and back again.
entering into the third stage, where we let go of the counting and enter into the actual practice. The first two stages were more preparation. And so again, really allowing yourself to drop deeper into the practice, applying all effort to notice when you're distracted and coming back. Keep on coming back to the breath, to the body. So in this stage, you're going to become sensitive to the body, sensitive to the head poised towards the skies, sensitive to the feet poised towards Mother Earth, and really become sensitive to the sensations in the body, allowing the whole body to breathe. Experience the whole body breathing. The body is breathing all the time. So really see if you can experience the whole body breathing, allowing breath to be your medicine. as we sink deeper into the practice, we begin to narrow down the focus. So the invitation is to become aware of the touch of the breath on the upper lip and inside the nostrils. And when you breathe in, you'll experience it cooler. And when you breathe out, it will be warmer. And you're really wanting to connect to these subtle sensations. This is what the practice really is about. It's connecting to the subtle sensations upon the upper lip and inside the nostrils. And these sensations, it could be heat, it could be prickliness or itchiness or throbbing or tickling. Anything you feel there is sensation. If you find yourself becoming frustrated because you're unable to connect to the sensations on the upper lip, just let it go and drop into the belly and become aware of the sensations of the belly rising and falling as you breathe. So focus on one part, either the upper lip and inside the nostrils if you can, and if not, in the belly. And allow the touch of the breath to soothe the body, to calm the body, to soothe the body, to calm the body. Let your breath be medicine. in this final stage, surrender, relax, surrender, just relax, do nothing. We don't have to do the breathing. The body breathes us. And really see if you can touch into a feeling of contentment. Nothing to do, just to be here now and experience the stillness, simplicity, and contentment of this moment now. Really see if you can touch into a moment of freedom and be here now. 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 Be here now. And touch into the stillness, simplicity, and contentment. Ahome atakwese, for all my relations. Ashe, asheo, ashe. So here we are. I'm just putting myself in gallery view so I can get to see who I'm in community with. Giving thanks to those of you who are able to turn your cameras on. That's always lovely. I know that for some people, the only way you can be here is with your camera off. But so I appreciate you being here. And it's just really wanting to connect the smudging with meditation. Often we smudge. And when I think about smudging, I think that meditation is a practice that can allow us to be the smudge out there in the world. You know, when we're smudge, we're clearing, and hopefully the perfume of the smudge clears stuff and it clears space. And can we be that stick of incense? Can we be that stick of smudge? Can we be that bundle of sage when we go back into our families? When we go back into our communities, can we be that smudge which clears space so that when people come into our sphere of influence, that they can feel some stillness in us, that they can experience some calm within us. You know, there are some people we come across, and energetically, you can feel like they're completely off center. Yeah. And in a way, meditation is regulating our system so that we can be on center, so that we can be peaceful. We can be that bundle of sage. We can be that stick of Palo Santo. Yeah, that clears the air. So I'm gonna talk for a little while, and but I also want you to be able to talk and contribute as well. It's always a conversation. And I was thinking yesterday or 2 days ago, what would I talk about today? What would be yeah, the Dharma talk or the Dharma conversation? And I wanted to speak about something in real life. And so I'm going to talk about the four sights, and maybe I've spoken about it before, but you know, can always go over these Dharma teachings. And the reason why I'm very much in touch with the four sights, I have a very close friend in her 60s who's rapidly declining with dementia. And this past week has been a very challenging week. I've had to call the family in across the border, the family across the border in Seattle, and there's things that we have to do because got to the point with bailiffs at the door just because, you know, forgetting to pay stuff, etc. But I could find myself as being in some kind of resentment that this isn't fair. You know, my friend's only in her 60s, and if people are to get dementia, then it should happen in her 80s, not in their 60s. Yeah. And I could really feel myself just really struggling with that. And it brought me back to the four sights which actually motivated and inspired the prince to go forth. You know, because you know, as the story says, is that the prince, well, when the prince was born, we, you know, said that his mother died in childbirth, and the father, most very agitated, activated by this, wanted to know what was the future of his son, and takes his son to the sage, hoping that his son is going to be this amazing warrior who's going to fight wars and win wars. And the sage is very clear and just says, you know, there's just no way your son's going to be a warrior. Your son is actually going to be a sage. Your son is going to be a teacher. This is what your son is going to do. And of course, as parents, those of you who are parents, you know, if we're lucky enough, we want to give the children the perfect conditions. We want to protect them. We want to be able to give them the perfect conditions. And as I say that, I know for some of us, perhaps we didn't grow up in those perfect conditions. But there are some of us who do, where parents are in that situation that they're able to financially support the children, which is a big thing, able not to bring the children up in poverty, etc. And so this is what the father does, has the money to be able to provide everything that his son needs. And not just that, is to be able to create a whole world for his son. So the son doesn't even have to go out into the outside world, doesn't he? Doesn't have to know what's happening beyond the walls because he lives in hundreds of acres. And so the son is completely mollycoddled. But as we know, those of you who have had children, their children become inquisitive. Children begin to actually challenge parents. Children want to know. And the prince gets to a point where it's actually what's happening beyond the walls? What's happening beyond the walls? And begs his servants to take him outside beyond the walls. And so, of course, the servants have to ask his father's permission, is it okay to take his son outside beyond the walls? And the father says yes, but in a month's time. And the father needs a month because he needs to clear up everything outside beyond the walls because he wants it to be completely perfect beyond the walls. It's perfect here. And how can it be perfect? And we see that it's like the Olympics happens and all of a sudden this gentrification happens and they move the homeless out, further out, so that people don't see that. So again, this is what the father does, is wanting to gentrify the village beyond the walls. Anyway, it's time for the prince to go outside beyond the wall, and his favorite servant takes him, and then in the chariot, sitting in the chariot, going along, being drawn by horses, and as they're going along, the prince is startled, completely startled, and says, "What's that?" And the prince is pointing to somebody on the street. "What's that?" And the servant says, "That's an old person." "Old? I'm going to get old." And the prince is like, "I'm literally going to get old." And to take a moment for yourself to think about, actually, how do we feel about aging? How do we, what do we think about aging? And I know this is an allegory, but actually for some of us, we think we're going to stay young all the time, or we are resentful because we're going to get old. And actually, in the prince's environment, the father obviously did a good job. He most probably fired all the servants who were aging, fired them and said, "That's the end of it, because you can only stay here if you're looking young." But just this discombobulation of actually realizing that actually he's not going to stay young and beautiful and handsome for the rest of his life. He goes back into the walls, into the beauty of the palace grounds. But he hasn't had enough, and he still wants to see more of the world. He still wants to go out. And so the father lets him go out again. And again, they go beyond the walls. And again, the prince is startled because there's this noise, and he can see somebody retching, birthing, like, and in absolute pain. And it's like, "What's that? What's that?" And the servant says, "That's a sick person." And the prince says, "I'm going to get sick? That's going to happen to me?" Yes, you are going to get sick. And again, if we think about ourselves, when we get sick, we can be resentful. It's like, even if we get a cold, we can be resentful because we can't do the things that we want to do. And again, if we are diagnosed, and there may be some of you here who are sick, who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and it's so difficult to come into relationship with that. How do we come into relationship with a terminal illness? How do we do that? And yet, we go into the teachings, it's said that that's part of the dukkha, that we are going to age and we are going to get sick, but yet we can be in so much protest against it. But the servant realizes that the prince is completely discombobulated, takes him back. But again, the prince hasn't had enough. Sometimes it's not enough. What else can happen? And so the prince wants to go out again, and the prince is taken out again. And again, this time the prince is just in complete shock, because in the street there are these people carrying this pyre, and there's a body on this pyre. And it's like he's never ever seen anything like this before. And it's like, "My God, what on earth is that? What is that?" And the servant says, "That's a dead person." Dead? What's dead? The servant has to said, this person is dead. There's no more life. This is it. That's it. That's the end of their life. End of life? What do you mean? Yes, there's no breath left in this body. No breath. I'm gonna be dead. There's gonna be no life. I can't carry on living this life. And again, completely discombobulated. And again, when we think about our demise, yeah, it's like sometimes we think we're going to live forever. I know sometimes I live my life as if I'm going to be here forever. And there's times when I remind myself I'm not here forever. Yeah. And again, at this point, the prince is so discombobulated that there has to be an answer to this sickness, aging, and death. What is the answer? There has to be a cure for this sickness, aging, and death. There has to be. And I think all of us in our own ways who have stepped onto the path of self-development, stepped onto the path of wanting to practice, we're looking for some kind of answer, what something that is going to help soothe us. And so the prince feels like if I'm going to see all of this in the outside world, I'm not going to find the answer in this realm, in this God realm that his father's created him. He's not going to find the answer in this hedonistic realm that his father's created him, and realizes the answer couldn't possibly be there. The answer has to be out there in the world. And he wants to go out in the world again. And he goes out into the world again. And this time, again, there is some shock, but some curiosity, because this time he sees this mendicant just walking in the streets with ragged robes, with a begging bowl in their hand. And this mendicant is radiating peace. Is radiating calm. This is the smudge. This mendicant is smudge for the prince. It's the stick of incense for the prince. And the prince is, who's this? What's this? And the servant explains, it's a mendicant, it's a wanderer, it's somebody who has knowing, somebody who has knowledge, somebody. And the prince thinks, perhaps this person has the answer. And it's this what actually inspires and motivates the prince to go forth to try and find the answer to this sickness, aging, and death. Yeah. And so we know at some point the prince cuts off his long hair, dons his beautiful clothes, and leaves his wife and child, which is something that would happen in those days, that actually the men would go forth, whether it was forth into war, whether it was forth into work or whatever, and would come back. And this, in a way, we can see that the prince was doing important work. The prince was going forth to do this important work, to really see if he could find an answer to this sickness, aging, and death. Was it possible to stop us from aging? And of course, we know there are many doctors and surgeons out there who are trying to find the answer so that we don't age so rapidly. And if you've got the money, you can actually pay for some kind of surgery, some kind of practice, so that you don't age. And of course, we know that surgeons, like, definitely how medicine has advanced. You know, once upon a time, some of the illnesses that we can have, we would have been dead in months. And now, because medicine has advanced so much, we've learned how to keep ourselves alive. And of course, there are scientists who are trying to find a way that we don't have to die. Is it possible to come back alive? I actually heard that there are some people who are so wealthy that actually when they died, they paid for their body to be on ice just in case there's a way to bring them back alive again. And if they are able to be brought back alive again, at least they will have money to live with. Yeah. So, I'm not making this up. This is what the mind does. We play tricks, we delude ourselves, we pretend that these things aren't going to happen. And it's only when something, perhaps some of you may have had a child who died. Yeah. And that can really shake us up and wake us up. It's like it's always the huge pain of a child dying. And yet we are in the West, it hits us even more because we have the privilege of medicine that is able to keep our children alive. Many we know that there are certain parts of the world, in the continent of Africa, in the continents of South America, even in Asia, that there are many women who know that actually there's going to be a percentage of the children who are going to die because they're just because of the poverty, because there isn't the medicines. Yeah. And then again, if we think of here, we are a bit in this God realm. We are in a God realm. Just imagine if war came to our doorstep. We live in countries where our countries are at war, but they're not at war on our doorstep. They're at war in other places. Yeah. And if war came to our doorstep, the resentment, we're going to die, but the fear. If you think of COVID, the pandemic, so interesting. I always say that actually the Dharma was preparing us for this impermanence. There were so many people who were so resentful that we had to go into lockdown, so resentful that we couldn't move around and we couldn't do these things. And yet, these whole teachings are about freedom, are about actually really bringing to mind that everything changes, that this living soma, this body is going to change. Even if you have fantastic health, I'm somebody who's had really great health, but it's not going to last forever. It's not going to last forever. Being fortunate and me not to be attached to that. And I know, last year I had some back spasms. I was like, I injured my back while I was camping and I had these back spasms. And for a while I was so much in resentment. And then I just thought, get over it. This is the body. The body will get sick. The body will age. Yeah. So let's move into some dialogue and some questions. Where are we? Where are we with these teachings? Where are we with the facts of actually realizing that we're going to age? How do some of you feel and think about aging? Yeah. How many of you perhaps cover up your gray hair if you've got gray hair because you don't want people to see that you're going gray? Sometimes I wonder, I have the genes at the moment that I have, I don't have gray hair, but I'm wondering if I start going gray, how am I going to feel about that? Kind of feel about it. How are you? Sometimes we wake up. I can remember about 25 years ago, I was going like this. What's this? This there was this line, and I was literally going, "What's this?" And it's like, "Oh, I'm aging. This is an aging line." But how are you in relationship with aging? How are some of you dealing with sickness, dealing with death, or do some of you have something which is a fourth sight which inspires you to practice, that motivates you to practice? Yeah. So let's open the floor. I think we stop the recording at this point. We don't record.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.